Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this latest edition of the 2020 Roundtable series, sponsored generously by Sandler Training. My name is Jonathan Farrington. I'm the CEO and founder and creator of JF Initiatives, which includes Top Sales World, Top Sales Magazine, Top Sales Futurist, and the recently launched Top Sales Library. I'm also the director of research over at Sandler Research Center. Do you know, whenever I look at that photograph, it reminds me, somebody a couple of years ago was looking at that and they said, are they really your own ears or did you borrow those from Leonard Nimoy? Which I found really cruel, and I try not to use that picture, but anyway, it got there. So let me introduce you to our panelists for today's topic, which is the future of sales team training and development, which of course is highly topical given the current situation out there. So, in alphabetical order, Mike Estevan. Welcome, Mike. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Jonathan. Very glad to be here and appreciate the opportunity to share some ideas.
Excellent. Okay, and just tell us a bit about yourself, Mike.
I'm CEO of Integrity Solutions. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, and been in sales for many, many years and just enjoy the idea of helping salespeople and managers improve their skills.
Excellent. Okay, good. And next, Dave Kerlin. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's, as always, it's a pleasure to be part of anything that you're doing.
You're too kind. Just tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself, will you?
I'm the CEO of Objective Management Group, which some of you already know is the most accurate and predictive sales assessment tool on planet Earth. And in my spare time, I'm the CEO of Kerlin & Associates, which is a global sales consultancy.
You have spare time?
Not really. I was lying.
I was sent a form, and it was all about personality. And it said, the question was, what do you do in your spare time? So I wrote down, people have spare time? I thought it was an incredible question. Anyway, welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
Colm Lunt. Welcome, Colm. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. First of all, pleasure to join this august group today. I'm the CRO of Sandler, focused on both revenue and delivery, and have been a long time client before I joined the company. So passionate about the topic we're talking about today.
Excellent. Well, we're delighted to have you on the panel. And I think this, well, I don't think I know, this is your first appearance on a roundtable. And we do hope that you'll come back and join us again often. And when you describe them as an august group, I think that's a wonderful way to introduce them. But they won't be an August group until tomorrow. Today, they're still a July group, okay? We need to be precise about that for the listeners.
Fair point.
And last but not least, Damon Jones. Welcome, Damon.
Hey, Jonathan. Hey, everybody. Excited to be back. So I'm also at Sandler. I work alongside Colm. I'm head of strategy and growth. Been here 6 months, but I've been in this the sales training methodology performance space for over 20 years. And kind of like Mike, I'm just enjoy the whole notion of helping people get better and organizations get better.
Hear, hear. Okay, well, it's good to have you back, Damon, so welcome. Okay, and there they are, that July stroke August group. So let's kick off. We'll go in clockwise order, as we typically do. So I'm going to come to you first of all, Mike. Let's just open up the debate, the discussion, whatever we're going to talk about today. I mean, specifically, we're going to look at how we believe, we five, how we believe sales training and development is going to move forward. And that, and whilst obviously, you know, we're in a very, very unusual situation at the moment, and we know that lots of organizations are transitioning to online training. What we've really got to work out, if we can, even though we don't have, you know, a glass ball, is that situation going to remain the same, or would it revert back if and when and if ever the virus disappears? What's your view, Mike?
A great question, Jonathan. As we've all seen, the past few months have been so different. People being forced to go to online training, some people postponing training. But at this point, I think we're saying that they realize they need to still proceed. And in fact, if there's ever a time in history that people need to improve their selling skills, it really is now, because their customers are in a different mindset. The salespeople are in a different mindset. The view of their ability to sell this way and perhaps sell virtually has changed. So it's really critical to learn how to sell more effectively, and virtual training is really on the rise. People thought about it and did it somewhat before, but now I think it's going to stay with us. Maybe not to the extent it is the past few months, but it'll stay with us because people see the savings in travel, and it still works.
Yeah, absolutely. When you first approached your clients and you said, look, we're going online with our development programs, what sort of, I can imagine it might sound like a dumb question because that's all that was on offer, but have they taken well to it?
Surprisingly, some clients have said, well, we'll just wait until this gets behind us in a month or two, and they realize now that's not going to be the case. But those that have gone online, especially virtual through Zoom or one of the other platforms, they're realizing it works. In fact, some people actually like it better because it's really a focused attention on people. They keep it in small groups. They're getting strong interaction, and they're saving time out of the field. So it's actually been received very well.
Yeah. That's the feedback that I'm getting. Dave, you transitioned very, very rapidly. How have your clients reacted?
Well, interestingly, all of our Curlin clients were all getting trained virtually anyhow. We were doing very little live face-to-face in a classroom or in a hotel room training. It had already been online. But I think what others have discovered since transitioning online is you have to be better. You have to be more charismatic. You have to be more engaging. The content has to be more focused. Mike mentioned that it's more focused in smaller groups. I don't think the group size has to be any smaller than it would have been in a classroom or live, but you've got to make it more visual. You've got to make it more engaging. You've got to make it more entertaining, because it's your job to keep people engaged. And with more focused training, capped at an hour at a time, more frequently and more engagingly, I think a bigger percentage of the people being trained are getting better than when we saw people in a classroom where not everyone was engaged and there wasn't much individual attention placed on an individual. I think it's a much better format for training, for all the reasons that Mike said, and the lower cost and the easier to get onto, the more individual attention. And I don't see any reason why it would ever go back to what it was like before.
Mm-hmm. Because you transitioned your sales management workshop, which was a live event, wasn't it? It's always been a live event.
Yeah, we used to do a 2-day sales leadership intensive, and it was about 16 to 18 hours over 2 days. We did that live. We just made it a 3-day with 4 or 5 hours at a time. But again, we took the same approach. We made it more entertaining. We made it more engaging. We were able to give more individual attention. We were able to use breakout rooms. And you know, all the feedback that we're getting is that our virtual events are better than and more desirable to attend than a live event that involves travel and sitting in uncomfortable chairs and having to wait until you break to use the bathroom and having to eat hotel food. Everything's better about virtual.
Yeah, true. You missed the bar, though.
I'm sorry?
That's okay.
I missed that. I didn't hear it.
Didn't they miss the bar?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, but they have one at home, so they just don't get to drink with
it. Of course. Damon, Sandler transitioned very, very quickly. And I think sort of virtually everything that's come out of Sandler almost from day one of lockdown has been virtual, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Kind of like Dave was saying, I felt we were quite well positioned because pretty much all of the reinforcement, ongoing continuous improvement work we do was already virtual and blended with digital self-paced learning. So what we had to tackle was many engagements would start classically with a 1 or 2 day classroom experience. So that's the part that we had to recalibrate, so to speak. But we've chunked it out. It's obviously not viable to have somebody captive on a virtual experience for 8 hours a day. So we just chunked that out into obvious segments, and that's worked really well for us. And also has enabled us to be fairly flexible in how we do that with different clients. You know, some have preferred to do shorter bite-sized pieces spaced over a number of weeks. Others have preferred to consolidate and do sort of four-hour sessions over 3 days, or rather like Dave was just explaining with his management program. So, yeah, we actually were, I was pretty impressed with the team here, because every program we had scheduled that was in classroom instructor-led training, within a week we had rescheduled to virtual and didn't drop any. Mm-hmm. That's testament to clients who were, you know, didn't want to back off. And I think, to Mike's point, said, no, this is a time more than ever we need to sharpen the saw with our, you know, our customer facing people. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to come back later on in the debate and discuss the sort of rejection rates and how many clients or customers, whatever you want to call them, have said, no, we're not, we don't really, you know, it doesn't appeal to us, online training. It's an interesting question. And another question I've got is, you know, what is the optimum duration for online sessions? But before I do that, Colm, your area of speciality, certainly now that you're with Sandvo, is clearly within the corporate arena. What has been the response over there?
I think it's been surprisingly good. I think the number of net new clients in the last 3 or 4 months has exceeded any 3 or 4 month period in recent history for us. And mainly it's because the nature, the logistics of pulling people together in person, along with the cost, has often been a roadblock to executing a program. And what we have found is that many of our larger corporate clients have taken travel budgets that will no longer be utilized, conference attendance budgets, and have put it into developing their people. So, the one thing I would make a distinction on is sort of digital learning versus live virtual. And for us, we're still able to be live, but we can do it at a time that's more convenient and, as Mike said, more focused. So we've seen quite a nice response, and in some ways unexpected response from many of our prospects and clients.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. It's a very interesting point that they are taking the funding that they were using for travel, and particularly in the corporate arena where they can fly people in from all over the world, and all of the subsistence costs, the hotel costs. And of course, and if somebody's sick and they can't get to the program can't be reorganized because it's live. So I mean, all those things are sort of taken into account. I mean, I remember 12, 15 years ago, I suddenly announced to all my clients that we were going online. And they were all very open-minded about it, apart from two large French ones, but then the French revolt about anything. But eventually, everybody came on board. And of course, they appreciated the advantages, which was increased flexibility, lower costs. And I think that's really a good point that I come to you, Mike. Are clients expecting the cost of training to be lower because it is online?
You know, some are, but we've been surprised if we've not had much pushback on price. In fact, some are actually willing to have a higher price because it may be spread out over multiple days instead of one or two days. It often will take a producer, so they understand that it may take more manpower. There's more logistics to it. So there's some challenges to it, but I think the price has not been an issue. We've been fairly pleased with that. There's so many advantages, as the team is saying here, and you used the word debate. I'm not sure that's the right word anymore, Jonathan, because I think we're all in like mind that this is really a positive thing. You know, we've been doing virtual for a lot of years. We've been doing virtual in our follow-ups for 30 years, and we've been trying to push workshops virtually, and a lot of clients haven't been open to it. But sometimes you need a slap on the head to do what you really need to do. And now clients are actually saying, we can train three times the number of people because of this, the cost savings. We're finding that people that couldn't attend, you got one person in Dubai, one person in South America, now they can join the courses. So you're actually having better coverage and able to get your training out to more people at a better cost.
Yeah. Well, I've got to ask you, Mike, do you feel that the future is online, or do you think it's more likely to be blended? Or do you think we will, if this thing ever disappears, go back to all those organizations that were delivering in classroom style? Do you think it'll go back to classroom style?
Well, I think I think there will be people go back to classroom, yes. I think it'll be a while till they're comfortable putting people on planes to do that. I think they'll realize that a blended version is right. Now, just online, where they asynchronously go on and learn intellectually, that I still don't think is the best thing, because sales is not just learning techniques and learning knowledge. We know so many salespeople that know what to do. They know their product. They have all the words, but they won't do it. So much of sales training is not just knowledge training, but it's mindset. It's shifting their mindset. It's practice. It's getting them to believe that they could do more than they could do in the past. So I think a blended, where you have online virtual, where an instructor is teaching, is still going to be the best. We get people, you can see them on camera now. They can interact. They can actually role play in groups. You can do breakouts. That's probably going to be the method that's most popular going forward.
Yeah. Good point. Dave, I mean, you've got hundreds of partners. I forget exactly how many, but and a lot of them are, probably most of them actually, are sales trainers, sales team developers. Have you had a discussion with them recently and asked them what they think the future is going to look like in terms of delivery?
As a matter of fact, I have. And they were in three camps. There are those who've been doing most of their training and coaching virtually for a number of years. There are those who had started doing some of it that way. And then there are those who were caught flat-footed, unable to travel, unable to go face-to-face, unable to do live events. And they were coming to us and say, quick, show us how to do this. Show us how to, which platform to use and how to use them and how to do it effectively. But, you know, we're what, 5 months deep into this now. And, you know, I don't think there's ever been an example of the new normal. This is the epitome of the new normal. And it's easier on us. I mean, not having to leave a chair all day and be able to reach, you know, several clients and train hundreds of them in the same day. For the people who haven't been doing that, that's a freaking miracle. And not having to live in an airport and in a hotel, and this is awesome. And clients feel the same way, because a lot of them could only, you know, that had dispersed sales organizations, they would have to pay travel expenses to get a team together even once a quarter. So beyond the cost of actual training, there was all the travel and entertainment expenses. So I think this is a win-win for everybody. And I think there's never been a better time to utilize a technology that was built for these times than some of the video platforms that are available to us and the features that some of those platforms offer for enriching our training and making it better.
Yeah. I'll come back to that in a moment. Somebody's got a canine that's wants to be let out, I believe. So if anybody wants to go and open the door and let him or her out, no problem. I do agree with you, Dave. I mean, do you have a view yourself on what the future is going to look like in terms of sales team development?
I do, and it's my canine, so I was kind of unable to. I'm on Bluetooth, so if I stray too far from the base, you'll lose me. You'll keep hearing hurt him. While I'm talking, there's nothing I can do about him right now. He's usually pretty quiet when I'm on, but looks like the hot tub serviceman pulled up, and he wants a new friend. I think the future of sales training will continue to be online, continue to be virtual, continue to get better. And I think it creates an opportunity for the companies providing video platforms to start adding more incredible features to make the platforms richer, because certainly they've got the revenue streams now to support any kind of development they want. Everybody's familiar with the platform, so that you don't get people on the platform and wondering how to use it anymore. Everything's just gotten so much easier. So yeah. I think it's here to stay.
Okay, that's great. We'll let you look after your canine friend. What I wanted to Colin. You'd like,
yeah. Just underscore what Dave said. I think, and I might have read this somewhere, so this is not an original idea, but I agree with it. The one benefit, or one of the major benefits of using the online platforms, is the ability to poll rapidly. And I think for many of us who have conducted live training in person, you'd sort of take a poll at the end of the 2-day workshop, right? At the end of the 1-day workshop, but you have the ability to quickly engage the audience by taking a poll, and you can use the anonymous feature so people feel very comfortable responding quickly over the digital medium. And then you can leverage that poll to take the discussion in a direction you need to. So I do think it affords us a few opportunities that we didn't see perhaps when we were in front of people live at a workshop.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you say a poll, you're really talking about a critique, aren't you?
Well, yes, but it could be a critique, but it's also, you can poll the audience to ask certain questions. So it's simply another mechanism to help drive the discussion or bring home a point.
I understand.
Allow you to quickly launch a poll, and they can see the results themselves on the platform.
No, that's a good point. Damon, you've got a point. I think you're asking, should we redefine blended?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I don't, I think it blended has been around for a long time. We just haven't defined it that way necessarily. But you know, when I think about our space, not just the sales training, but the general training space, you know, I think the recent or current definition has been some combination of physically present classroom training or physically distant virtual live training with e-learning, you know, with some digital learning. But I see it much broader than that. You know, particularly with, from a generational standpoint, with our, you know, sales, customer-facing populations, 20s, 30s people, they learn in a whole raft of different ways. And certainly I did, you know, in my work sales career. And so I think, you know, we need to really embrace that and just think about, you know, a whole raft of ways that they absorb and learn. You know, they're very used to digital, YouTube, social learning, you know, which again, it's not a new phenomenon, but the technology is driving a lot of, you know, different ways people absorb and consume information and learn. So, you know, it's not like mentoring is a new thing, but the way people are accessing that has changed. So I just think there's a whole new way to think about blended learning experiences and over, you know, a journey, not episodically with what we all know doesn't work, which is, oh, I just dump people through 2 days of a classroom and I tick the box and I think I did the job, when we all know that's completely, you know, invalid. But
yeah,
many organizations have done that and continue to do that.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, those days, thank goodness, I think we're well past them, aren't we? When the sales trainer would turn up with a rainforest full of folders and you'd sit and you'd start at page one, and over 3 days you'd work your way wearily through. And if there was anything that was going to put me off professional selling, it was those dreary things. I have to say that. What I am going to do in a moment, I'm going to address the challenges that we face when we deliver digitally rather than face-to-face or in the classroom, and Dave touched on this. Before I go there, though, what I'd like to ask you, Damon and Colm, is it not the case that, certainly within the corporate arena, what we've done by going online with our development programs, we've opened up the horizon globally, haven't we?
Yeah, well, I think Mike touched on it. I think it was Mike, you know, how one can scale much more quickly and reach, you know, a global population. Now, of course, there's language, cultural things that one has to consider. But even that, you know, it's, you know, there are ways through that. So, I mean, I think that the whole, you know, so philosophy of being able to connect everybody virtually, digitally, is accelerates everything for organizations. I mean, imagine the challenge if you're a global chief revenue officer and you got hundreds or thousands of people and you're trying to get everybody to behave, act in a consistent way in terms of customer interactions, how you pursue opportunities, deals, manage accounts. That's a headache to try to think about how you know, would go implement and execute on something like that. I mean, just the logistics alone is mind blowing, you know, and I've been through many of those, led many of them, as this team has. And so we all know the challenges, but, you know, it takes a lot of that away where you can move much more speedily.
Yeah. Just before I come on to you, Colm, Dave, you've got something you want to add about engagement and improvement, I believe.
Yeah, one of the things that is truly different about virtual training and being online and having cameras focused on individuals, if you take your typical live training room scenario where everybody's in front of you, the trainer, and you want to role play with somebody or even discuss a topic with somebody, if that person's in the back half of the room, for example, there's rows of people in front of that person who don't see them. And with cameras, everybody's front and center. So it changes the dynamics when you bring somebody on camera to be with you one-on-one. It's just two people to focus on when you're doing a role play, or if you're discussing a specific topic with one person, two people on camera, or if you want to bring the group in and have everybody on camera at the same time, and it looks like a room full of people, except everybody sees everybody, and the ability to see everybody changes the level of engagement and the dynamics. I think having everybody on camera is a huge distraction, and don't like doing that unless there's a discussion going on. So when content is being presented, I think everybody should be off camera. But when you bring everybody on camera for a discussion, it's so much more powerful than in a physical classroom.
Yeah, no, so it's a good point. What do you believe is the optimum number for a successful sales development session, Dave, online?
Online? I think it has to be answered two ways. If you're going to have everybody on camera, the optimal number is probably capped at 20. But if you're going to do training online, I think you can have an unlimited number of people, just because everybody's seeing you up close and personal, and you're seeing them up close and personal when you bring them on camera. So I think the traditional concept of, you know, 40 or 50 being a large group goes out the window with virtual.
Yeah, good point. So, Colm, I was going to ask you about the reception that you've got from your largest corporate accounts when you've confirmed that you are making or have made this transition. I mean, were you welcomed with open arms? Were they beaming happily?
We'd like to think so, but there was certainly a handful that needed to be convinced of themselves that this could be as effective as the live training. One of the drawbacks that we should mention, it's the other side of the coin from what Dave just suggested, is sometimes when you're in person, you're reading the room, and like any good salesperson, I think a good facilitator will sense if someone is not buying into what, you know, what it is they're talking about, and they'll pull it out of them. So they can read the body language. They can invite that person to share some of their misgivings or concerns or even questions that they might be reluctant. If it's online, virtually, it is a bit easier for them to shut their camera off or you know, to put themselves on mute and not, you can't sort of read as much. So I think, you know, that is, therein lies the difference. There's definitely more prep involved in executing a virtual session. There's best practices in terms of how many slides or how long you should go in terms of a lecture before you pull people into the discussion and engage them. To get back to your question, we had a handful of clients that said no problem, and most of the clients said no problem, and converted. We had a handful that needed a bit of convincing. So what we did is work through, we converted basically 2 hours of live instructor training to 90-minute sessions, which seems for us to be the optimal time. I wouldn't go more than that. And again, we've figured out best practices and leveraged the best practices we have learned over the years in terms of the reinforcement we would do virtually, and it seems to be in some ways even more effective. And so I think, you know, it's fair to say that the majority of our clients have been very pleased. And should things return to normal, I'm not sure that they would all advocate for a move back to, you know, in-person workshop.
Oh, I'm absolutely certain that's the case, Colin. Yeah, certainly everybody I'm speaking to, it's in the last 9-10 weeks, you know, they're actually seeing the benefits of online sales team development. They see not only the lower cost, which of course we've discussed, but it's just the practicality of it and the convenience, and they can see how it works. Okay, good. Mike, coming back to you, what are some of the challenges that you've discovered when you've made the transition from, you know, from delivering live? I mean, we've touched on a few of them, but specifically, which are the ones that you have had to confront, and how have you overcome them?
Great question, Jonathan. Again, we've been doing virtual for a long time, but as we're seeing clients shift to it internally, we've got a lot of folks that, number one, do it very poorly. They need to understand the technology, obviously, but we're seeing some internal trainers that turn this into more of a presentation. And the key to online learning, we believe, is interaction. Our preference is to use less slides so that you keep people on camera, because there's that accountability, as some of you have talked about, that if you can see everybody in the class, there's a stronger accountability to actually pay attention. You can start to learn how to pick up their body language, whether they're really paying attention, you know, are they taking notes, or are they multitasking off on their iPhone? But making sure that people are engaged is a key thing. Another challenge is making sure that you do a lot of breakout groups. Much more than a lecture in a classroom, you've got to have shorter segments, has been talked about, more interaction, more engagement. We've shifted also some of the content to pre-work. We have an online platform where they go online and they watch a video or they do other activities. That's a social learning one so that they can see what each other are doing and learn from each other. But then come back in, so when you're in the classroom online, you're actually, it's more application and interaction and talking instead of just listening to knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. Dave, I mean, you're a natural personality. I mean, your personality oozes out of you, and it
shows. Oh no, I'm oozing. That's a horrible description.
It's not.
I got an image of my personality leaving my body in oozing gel. Well,
it might have done with the first ones that you did if you were that nervous. But I mean, you do have a natural personality. So, I mean, because I see quite a lot of your presentations. But, you know, when you're talking to all of your partners, I mean, are some of them struggling making this transition simply because it is a new set of rules? It requires a new style of delivery. And I mean, do you think it's the case that some of them don't have the right personality to make it successful?
I think that is the case. And I don't think it's limited to not having the right personality. I think a lot of it's limited to an inability to talk to a computer monitor. Mm. And we see it the same way when people record videos, you know, whether it's a broadcast quality video or it's an impromptu video or it's them in their study or in their backyard. They go one-on-one on a camera and they get kind of stiff and they get kind of monotone, and the animation and the excitement and the charisma kind of goes away. And I think the same thing happens when they're talking to a computer monitor, and they need the energy of a live room to come to life. And I think the big adjustment is that, you know, some of them never had a personality even for a live room. And I have a feeling if they lacked the personality to be effective in front of a computer monitor, they were equally ineffective in a live room. But they need to find a way to bring the live room energy to a screen. And I think that's the big challenge. And a lot of them, especially the older ones, are technologically challenged, and they aren't taking the time to learn their interfaces and see what they're capable of to keep it exciting for the people in the other room, to keep changing the look, the feel, the sound. There are so many things you can do to keep a group engaged if you don't have a natural oozing personality. And that way it doesn't have to be about you. It can be about the experience.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, from my personal standpoint,
but it wouldn't be any fun.
Well, yes, exactly. From my personal standpoint, I used to love being live. Whether you're giving a keynote or whether you're delivering in a classroom, actually feeding off the audience or feeding off your delegates and your group training group. And I find it isn't the same online, but it's something that we have to accept and we just have to adapt. Okay, now, before I come to you, Damon, what I'd like you all to do, as we typically do at the end of a roundtable, we leave the audience, the listeners and the viewers, with a couple of tips to take away. And this is what I'd like you to think about. For organizations or individuals that are now committed to transitioning online, if they, you know, and let's assume they haven't already done so, or if they have, they're not being as successful as they possibly could be, and they probably haven't accepted that this is the way forward. What two tips, because we're short on time, we won't make it three, what two tips would you all leave them with? So I'll let you have a think about that whilst I just go back to Damon and Colm again. Damon, you and I had a conversation a long, long time ago, and you did share with me, and I don't think I'm giving any secrets away, that, you know, you can be quite shy online, and, you know, but you got used to delivering, and I've seen you now deliver online and have conversations, and you appear much more comfortable. How did you overcome your natural reticence? Because I think this is almost a very good tip for people.
Yeah, I think, Dave was kind of just touching on a little bit. I just think it sounds very simple, but just finding a way just to be yourself, right? I think that over time we've seen, as soon as you put a microphone or camera in front of people, they stop being natural, right? And being themselves. Yeah. And so for whatever reason, it does that to folks. And so I think it's just finding your own way to just be yourself and be natural and not even think about either a camera or a microphone being there. So I do think that as we've all had to embrace, you know, virus video conferencing and virtual distant mechanisms, it's probably accelerated that for everybody. And then I would say the other thing that I was thinking about as I was listening to Dave and Colm was,
was you've got to find a way to create your own energy. And so that's probably different for everybody, but I do think, like, if you're in a live classroom, that is a real thing where you can feed off the energy that's, you know, physically present with you. And certainly for me, you know, I'd be walking around, you know, which again gives me a way to maintain an energy level. Now, that's not as viable when you're stuck in front of a monitor or a microphone or whatever, right? So your webcam. So, you know, for me, I always stand up. You know, that's for me how a way that it just helps me stay really, you know, keep my energy level up, feel physically present, sharp, you know, have that presence that one wants to have that can, you know, engage and keep people engaged. So
yeah.
Those are the things that I found personally.
Good. That's very useful. Okay, thanks. Colm, how you've delivered some online development, haven't you?
Yeah.
And how did you train yourself to do that? I mean, did you rehearse, did you practice, or did you just hope that your natural personality would show through the first time you did it?
It has to do with, for me, it had to do with something I think Mike mentioned, less slides, less me talking, less didactic, thinking and planning the session in a more Socratic way. And by asking questions, you almost right off the bat, you're pulling the audience in. And so the more we can drive discussion and participation, I think the more the energy level goes up, the less distracted people are. So for me, the shift was much more of a preparation. When you stand up and deliver the same content, you can do it, you know, by rote. But I think it forces you to be much more mindful of what is going to engage that audience. So that combination of questions, discussion, exercises, role play, etc.
So did you find it relatively easy to project your personality online as you do naturally in person?
You know, I haven't really thought much about that. To Damon's point, I just tried to be myself, whether I'm in person or delivering virtually. One thing that I will say helped is it's a very technical thing, but talking, you know, structuring the video so that you're looking at just the screen of the person talking on the other end allows you to really envision a one-on-one conversation. You've got plenty of other people, but for me, it's much easier if I'm having a discussion or envisioning myself having a discussion with one person versus sort of being on stage. So I'm not sure if that answers the question, but that's how I looked at it.
Yeah. When I first started delivering in class, in person, consultancy and training and development and counseling and coaching, I used to notice on the first day of any program that broadly the delegates fell into three categories. Now, you four will possibly tell me there's a fourth and a fifth, and I'll be delighted if there is. But typically, there would be prisoners, and the prisoners would be saying to themselves typically, "Oh God, what am I doing here? I'm not going to learn anything. I could be out earning commission. Ah, arms folded." Then you've got the vacationers. "Hey, this is pretty good, isn't it? Hotel's great. Have you seen what's in my minibar? I am, the chicks are pretty good. Which club are we going to tonight?" And then you've got the enthusiasts. And they're saying, "Well, you know, my company's asked me to come here. They've told me it's going to improve my performance. And so I'm going to learn as much as I possibly can." And I always thought that my challenge was, by the time we got to the first coffee break, say at 11 o'clock on the first day, my challenge was to convert them all to enthusiasts. That's how I challenged myself. Are we able to identify that as easily? Can we identify those three groups online as easily, Mike?
You know, that's a good question. We've all seen those different categories. In some ways, it may be harder, but I think you can still pick that up. And part of it's how you how you do the pre-work and how leaders set it up. Hmm. We like to have a senior leader come on at the beginning and talk about why this is so important. They can't always do that in a physical classroom. They may not be there, but they can more easily pop on and give a senior leadership commitment message, or they can have it on video ahead of time to help people get the mindset right. So that's true. I think what you find is that there is a stronger engagement with a lot of this because of the higher accountability, and you can look at each other. That right now, Jonathan, I think there's a big shift going on that you've got really successful salespeople that all of a sudden realize, I don't know how to do this virtually. So they may be showing up with a little more interest in learning something new because they've been used to going around and seeing all their buddies or calling on people face to face, and now they've got to do it virtually, and they just don't know quite how to do that. Yeah. So I think we'll see less prisoners than we did in the past.
Well, interestingly, I think our next round table, I think we're almost decided, we're going to look at all of this from the perspective of the salesperson and think about the challenges that they're facing selling digitally. I know there's been a sort of plethora of books suddenly released, typically, dealing with this topic. But what I really want to do is get our A-listers on the panel again and seriously take a look at that. Now, just before I come back to you and finally to ask for your two tips, Dave, I think you've heard me use those three categories before. Did you not tell me that you thought of a fourth, or were you happy with my three?
Oh, I'm very happy with your three. Who can take issue with anything that you suggest?
You are oozing calm, Dave.
Thank you. I have to work really hard at that.
Right. Can we come to you, Damon? Are there a couple of tips that you can leave everybody with, please?
Sure. Yeah, I think that I probably touched on one of them, that I think that organizations should really embrace sort of multiple learning opportunities or modalities. I mean, we've obviously talked a lot about classroom, virtual, live training, digital a bit, but you know, I think you have to blend in coaching opportunities, peer mentoring, etc., into a learning experience. So I think this, you know, pandemic situation we're in should be accelerating those things. You know, there are great opportunities. You know, one of the hottest things is we're getting better at how to do rehearsal, practice, role play in virtual environments. But, you know, organizations need to embrace that, and sales managers need to get better at that. I think they're always a critical piece, but I think it puts more emphasis on that piece too. And then I do think, you know, there's some interesting moves happening with technology that many organizations are starting to leverage. But this confluence of, you know, sort of the content, learning, operationalization of tools and processes coming together is a great opportunity for organizations. I mean, there's some very interesting sales enablement technology. There's some great conversation intelligence technology. You know, we're starting to partner with those firms ourselves. And so I think that has to be in the mix of things as to how you're going to successfully get people to be effective and stay contemporary, you know, so.
Yep. Good advice. Colm, have you got a couple of tips for us that you can leave everybody with?
Sure. I would think about aligning it with the work thread as much as possible. And we had a colleague, Bill Morrison, who's written a few white papers on the sort of notion of the work-aligned learning thread. But it, you know, the onus to make it successful ultimately is going to be on the sales managers and enablement. And it is leveraging the gaps they are seeing. So if they're seeing certain gaps repeatedly in a sales forecast or a deal debrief call, it's incumbent upon them to quickly shift and ensure that the partner that they're working with or their internal skills development is aligned with those areas that are you know, in most need of help. And I think, you know, structuring the training, whether it's virtual, live, et cetera, to that, it really gets the most engagement because you're addressing real issues versus this sort of, you know, sort of Ferris wheel approach where, okay, now we're going to teach the next topic versus the next topic. It's aligning it to the areas that are in most need of help. And it just so happens that right now, as Damon just pointed out, that there are so many people that need help selling virtually because they're used to meeting people face to face and relying on the relationships and taking people golfing, et cetera. Many of them, their prospecting muscles have atrophied a little bit. They're and certainly virtually selling. So I think that would be my advice is to make sure it is aligned with the work thread. And then two would be, as I mentioned before, make sure you're preparing the session to drive maximum engagement.
Yeah. Good advice. I mean, I've always believed that any sales training or development should always be aimed against diagnosed or perceived weaknesses. There's absolutely no point in training everybody on everything. I mean, it's quite usual for training courses to address skills that they already have or skills that they may never need. And this is really what happens when sales management abdicates responsibility for that diagnostic to the sales training company. So, I couldn't agree more. Mike, back to you. Couple of tips, please.
One thing is, I'd say do more training, period. Just be thinking about you can do more now, more cost effectively. It's easier. We've got the technology. So do more because salespeople really do need it. They're going through personal issues. Their customers are changing. Clients may actually prefer to be sold virtually a lot more. We're having a lot of folks in healthcare, for example, that the hospitals are saying, well, we don't need this many reps in the hospital. You need to set an appointment. So their world is changing. They're going to need to learn how to sell more virtually. So you need to do more training. Number two is don't forget that sales training is not just knowledge training. There's also such an important mindset issue. And right now, people need to shift their view of what selling is. It may not just be taking people golf and to lunch. How do they shift their view of selling in a positive way and shift their view of their abilities to sell in this new world? And then the final thing is how the managers know how to coach to that mindset, because the managers probably never had to do, you know, selling the way they're doing it today.
Well, absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, it's a hot topic for some of us right now. Sales leadership, but more about that later. Dave, would you like to ooze a couple of tips for us?
Oozing away. A couple of things. I think selling itself hasn't changed that much. It's just the way we reach people that's changed. You know, video instead of phone, video instead of face-to-face. What's changed is that for the first time since 2008 and 2009 and 2010, selling's gotten a lot more difficult. And the economic ramifications of the pandemic have wiped out some industries, you know, travel, tourism, small retail, you know, they've been obliterated. So the folks that sell to those groups have to find a different place to sell to. So the overall ramifications of that are that people are using the pandemic as an economic reason to either not spend money today or to drive prices down. So salespeople need the training to learn how to properly sell value to prevent that from happening to them. That's one piece. Piece number two, everybody's getting pretty comfortable using video. I mean, after 5 months of this, I mean, you couldn't avoid video. What they haven't yet gotten comfortable with, and this is more certain industries, certain reps, is the concept of whether or not they believe their customers and their prospects will meet with them on video. I'm still seeing a lot of resistance to that. Oh, our customers will never allow that, especially in pharma. Oh, the doctors will never get on a video call with us, especially if they were calling on folks in a manufacturing plant. Oh, our customers would never get on a video with us. And they will, but they have to ask for a meeting that way. And then the third thing is in the training itself. And that is we need to make sure when when any of us are training a sales team, that we're finding out what's going on with the salespeople in between sessions. I think that's more important than ever, since we're not really there and we're not really with them, and we can only influence them a couple hours a month as opposed to the 140 something hours their sales managers might be influencing them. We need to stay in touch with them in between training sessions to make sure that they're taking what we're giving them and putting it to use, just in case the sales managers aren't coaching to the content, holding them accountable to change.
Yeah, absolutely spot on, Dave.
I'm done oozing.
You could ooze on all night. Okay, well, we've reached the witching hour. So I'd really like to thank the panel for a superb input. And I hope the audience and the listeners and the viewers are going to take so much away from this, because there's some really, really valuable wisdom in there. So to my guest today, Dave Curlin, Damon Jones, Colin Lunt, I say a big thank you. To you again, the listeners and the viewers, if you want to find out more about our panelists, simply pop over to Top Sales World. In the top nav bar, click columnists and you'll find them all. Actually, that's not true. You won't find Colm yet, but he's due to be added next week, and he's going to be contributing to Top Sales Magazine as well. So what we've been running since the beginning of the lockdown is a special area over on Top Sales World called We Will Win Through Together. We thank Dave Curlin for the together. What you will find over there is a lot. The shelves are stacked with videos, webinars, articles, blog posts, and they're all designed to help frontline sales professionals and their managers' managers to try and get through this thing together. And it's so, so invaluable. There are literally hundreds of pieces of wisdom and advice over there. So I do hope you'll make the most of it and get yourself across. And then finally, we've touched on the sales futurists. Dave and Mike are actually members of the 24 Strong team. Now that we've got the Top Sales Library up and running, and I'm not going to get into that now, we're going to pay an awful lot of attention and give a lot of love to the Top Sales Futurist location, simply because it focuses totally on the future of professional selling. So expect to hear and read and see big, big things as we move towards the end of 2020. So with that, I hope you've all enjoyed this particular roundtable. I did hint that the next roundtable is going to be devoted and dedicated to those people that have got to use new techniques to sell, and of course their managers, and we will have a pretty heavyweight team yet again and panel. So for now, this is Jonathan Farrington. Thank you again for joining us. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.